Welcome back, people, to episode 24 of Black Tomatoes here at Black Hollywood Live. We are chatting all things about Spike Lee's Black Klansman and Disney's Christopher Robin. Stay tuned. It's a ball of confusion here in Black Hollywood Live on Black Tomatoes. Hello, 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 and welcome everyone. We are so happy that you join us every week and check us out. I am your host, Carla Renata, and you can find me everywhere, but we'll talk about that later.
Pretty much.
We'll talk about that later. And I have with me my co-host, as usual,
Scott M. How are you?
Scott M. Hey, what's up? I just want to give you guys a shout out there in the chat room and on the internet. You guys are always supporting us. You talk back with us. You just fly. And we just want to give you a big, huge thank you. You've been hanging in there with us for 24 episodes. If you really like it, and you know what? I know some of my famous, this is the thing. I know some of my famous friends watch the show. I talked to Reginald Vell Johnson, and he told me he watches it.
Wow.
Omar Epps, when I interviewed him here, says he watches it. So I know y'all are watching the daggum show. Give us 5 stars on iTunes and but let us know how you feel about us on YouTube. The good, the bad, and the ugly. We can take it. Grown folks.
Yeah. If we suck, let us know.
Yeah, we can take it. Let us know. It's
we'll
all
take
good.
It. We'll try to get better. Come on.
It is all good. How was your week?
Busy. I feel like it was a very, stressful week. How about for you?
It was stressful because it was hot.
Oh, my God. When is this going to stop?
Oh, my God. For those of you who do not live in Los Angeles, it is literally hell.
It is hell.
It is hell. It is like that Stevie Wonder song, Hotter Than July. It is so hot here. I can't even stay. I can't sleep. I can't concentrate. I can't write. I literally get up at 5 o'clock in the morning because it's cooler at 5 o'clock in the morning to do whatever I have to do because I cannot handle it.
I cannot handle it either. I've been same as you. I've been waking up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning because I'm sweating and I'm why is my air conditioning's on? Why am I hot?
Oh
why am
God.
I waking up sweating?
And it's supposed to be even worse. We're supposed to get triple digits this week. I am not looking forward to it. That is not what I want my life to be for the month of July in the summer, but it is what it is. Maybe I'll just go to a cooling center or go to the beach, but I can't really be in the beach with the sand with my doggy because the sand is hot. It'll hurt his little paws.
Yeah.
It'll hurt my feet, too. Why am I trying to make it all about him? It really is all about me.
Deflecting to the dog.
It's all good. It is all good. So I wanted to start talking a little bit about Disney's Christopher Robin.
Sure.
It is, of course, produced by Disney, and it stars Ian McGregor and Hayley Atwell, who I loved from Agent Carter on ABC. I loved her so much on that
man,
show.
Man, rest in peace.
I was so sad when it went away. I was really sad when it went away because it was one of my favorite shows, and she freaking rocked. I'm like, yes, a superhero. She wasn't a superhero, but super agent. I loved her anyway. But it picks up where Christopher Robin leaves. They show us kind of how he grows up and everything, and he leaves to grow up, and then he comes back because he's having a crisis in his life. He's become negative. He's become the thing that all adults do. We forget, and some of us lose as we get older, that childlike wonder and that childlike innocence and that exuberance that we have. Some of us lose it as adults, and he loses it, and Pooh helps him find his way. Let's take a look at the trailer. Yay! Mm-hmm.
Pooh? Christopher Robin.
No.
The tree I remember was in the countryside, not here in London. There's no opening.
I suppose it's where it needs to be.
Well, that's a silly explanation.
Why, thank you.
Pooh, why are you here?
Oh, yes, I need your help. I've lost all of my friends.
Let's get to the bottom of this. Look up, Pooh. Here I come. It would appear that I am stuck.
Have you just eaten honey?
I have not just eaten honey. I wonder which way.
I always get to where I'm going by walking away from where I have been.
Do you?
That's the way I do it.
I love that. This is what I love about... I go to see Disney movies and I...
Hello, everyone.
turn into a six-year-old little girl. It doesn't matter what Disney movie it is. There's something about the way, for me, the way that Disney makes a film, good, bad, or indifferent. You just feel like you... I don't know. You just feel like you want to jump back into your childhood.
You're like teleported back to your childhood?
Yeah, just for like a second. And Winnie the Pooh is one of my favorites. Like, we had little cutout cardboard dolls and stuff, and I used to sing that song, Winnie the Pooh. Like, it was... And I had a Pooh doll. Like, oh. I had a Pooh doll. I had a Tigger doll. I had a Piglet doll. Piglet was my favorite because she was a little little. Mm-hmm. A little thing. But I just... I loved Winnie the Pooh, and I loved the way that the directors and the cinematographers and the editors went about making that transition to see how he grew up, because we didn't know how Christopher Robin grew up. The last time we saw him in a movie with Pooh, he was a little kid. So we got to see how he grew up. We saw him go through the war. We saw him meet his wife. We saw him get married. We saw them have a child. And then we saw him get a job and have a job that keeps him so incredibly busy that he forgot what's most important, your friends and your family. You can always get another job. You can always, you know, have another deadline. But what you can't replace is you can't replace your family, and you can't replace really good friends that support and love you. And that's what I got out of that film, and I love it. I'm very well aware that there are some adults that are not going to like it. They're going to hate it for a variety of reasons. But this movie isn't made for us. It's made for little kids. So yeah. There's that.
Yeah. I think I was mixed on this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I totally understand and I appreciate the childlike sense of wonder that this movie gives me. Whenever Pooh and Eeyore and Piglet and Tigger on screen, I am just like a kid in the candy store. I'm like, yay!
I know, isn't
but
it wonderful?
It's just,
don't
it's
you get
so
excited?
Delightful. And I love the look of these characters in this movie because they look a little faded, they look a little dated, and it's great because it's a period of time, right? A large portion of time has passed. So they don't look bright and colorful. They look a little dull. They look played with. And I think that really works in the film's favor. What doesn't work in the film's favor, in my opinion,
here we go,
is, sorry,
he's gonna pour acid rain on my parade.
it's that Ewan McGregor is great in the role. In fact, most of the adult characters in this movie are great. What's not so great is the fact that the script doesn't really give them much backstory or much to do. I feel like it relies very heavily on creating a emotional connection because, hey, this is my wife. Hey, this is my daughter. And that's really all you get. Like, there's no real conflict there. Like, you get some foreshadowing that he's like, you know, he's working too hard. He's working too much. But there's not enough, like, oh, we need to see him go to, like, missing a high school performance or doing something. Like, there needs to be more scenes where he's shown kind of being the bad dad. It's just kind of implied.
Well, I don't think he was a bad dad.
Well, that's not what I meant, but, like, not a bad dad, but, like, an absentee in a lot of ways where, like, he's too worried about the money and work, and he's not too focused on the family.
But don't you think that speaks to where we are in economically right now in the world? I mean, it's tough. A lot of parents hold down two, sometimes three jobs just to make it work. And that's when it's just them, let alone bringing a child into the mix. So I think economically it spoke to that, slightly.
No, the foundation is there. What I'm ultimately saying is that there's just not enough of that shown in the film. So when the film has its emotional payoff in the end, I felt very like, eh, because I didn't feel like there was enough interaction between the characters and enough reason to really care. It's like, we're going to set it up. It's going to be kind of like this very broad scope of what's going on. And then we're going to focus on Pooh and everyone in the woods, which is great because that's the highlight of the movie. But when it opens on something that's built on a relationship and then closes on something that's built on the relationship, and the most of the film does not focus on that relationship, that's where I think the movie gets... falls a few notches down.
Okay. I kind of disagree just a tad.
Okay, go for it. No, I love when you disagree with me. I really do.
I know you do. You're like, let's fight. Get them gloves on. this is the thing. So I don't feel like it has to be telegraphed that he's not there. There's enough in the dialogue. There was enough in the dialogue for me. And not so much in the dialogue, but just in the acting, especially with that little girl, the little girl that played Madeline. She was so good. And I think that there's one scene in particular where he didn't come home yet again in time to have dinner with the family, and he goes to read her a bedtime story, and she wants him to read Treasure Island, and he pulls out some book. I don't even know what that book was.
I forgot what it was too, but it was something like ridiculous. Where you
some
were like,
crazy
no.
book like about industries or something. It was crazy, and she was in all she it. It really didn't matter to her when her dad, and most little kids are like this. When they have a parent that's not there a lot, and I think personally I related to it a lot more because my dad was in the military, so he was gone more often than he was there, and my mother was the one that was kind of like holding it down. So I think I personally resonate. I'm getting ulterior. What
it's
is
okay.
wrong with me?
It's okay.
I personally resonated with it because I could remember, like, I literally thought my dad lived in an airplane because we were always taking him to the airport and picking him up from the airport because he was always being stationed someplace where we weren't going to be with him. So I was like, what is happening?
Oh, my God. Carla's having tears in her eyes. Oh, my. It's okay.
So I was just like, when I saw that, you know, he wasn't there and he was doing the best he knew how to do. He was doing the best. Because think about it, the little bit that they showed of his parents, his dad wasn't around either, so he was doing what he knew. He didn't know any better. He was only emulating what he'd seen his parents do. I mean, his parents shipped him off to boarding school, and he was going to ship her off to boarding school, and she was trying to find a way for him not to ship her off. So she thought if she got these important papers for him that he needed, that that would stop him. And at the end of the day, he was like, you're more important to me than any papers. And I was like, oh, let me tell you something. Every time that little girl came on screen, I had a perpetual lump in my throat. Just perpetual lump in my throat. And I thought, I'm trying to hold back the tears. Like, I remember at one point, my eyes were so full of water that I purposely was holding my head back, trying not to blink, because I knew that it was just going to be waterworks all down my face. And when I finally did let them fall, it was just horrible. And even my mother went to the screening with me, and she was like, are you crying? And I was like, yes! It was awful.
But I think you bring up a very interesting and important point. Is that this movie resonated with you on a level that I feel like half the critics who saw this, it resonated with them as well. And then half the audience who probably will see this will resonate with this movie too. That's the great thing about film, right? Yes. It's that we can sit here and talk about something
everybody sees it differently.
Everyone sees it differently, but there's also, like, sometimes you watch a movie and you just connect with it. You know, like that, you connected with your father with this movie. And that's what makes movies such a great art form.
And to your point, that's what makes Disney really good at doing those types of movies, because they have literally, I don't know if they've bottled it, honed it, canned it, whatever they've done, but they have found a way to make their films resonate on some level or not. And it's just, I turn into like a 5-year-old every time I go there.
It's
for
okay.
anything. It is, I don't know. Maybe I should go work at Disney.
Yeah, with how many connections you've been making lately, I'm surprised you haven't gotten an offer yet.
I'm like, maybe I should just go work at Disney.
Attention, Disney. Please hire Carla Renata.
Thank you, Disney.
Scott Menzel.
Oh, my God. I love Disney. I remember watching Wonderful World of Disney on Sundays when I was a little girl. Like, it was the bomb. And I just loved it. I did. I haven't seen all the Disney movies, so there's like a big handful of them that I haven't seen. But I liked Christopher Robin. I do agree that it was a little slow and laborious in some spots.
Yes.
It was.
Yes.
But overall, like I said, I don't think, and I've said this before when it comes to these movies. I said this about Peter Rabbit. I said this about another film that we saw.
Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, I always say this when it comes to films that are made for children, because I find that adults go in watching it as an adult. And a lot of times, as critics, we don't go in and we watch it as a critic, as an adult critic criticizing a film. But we also should, if it's a film made toward a certain demographic, we should also watch it from that lens as well.
I think the reason for this one, why it's gotten mixed reviews, is I think a lot of people feel very similarly to the way that I talked about this movie, where I feel like the human characters are not really fleshed out. I feel like the script is kind of uneven. It is, like you said, a little slow and a little tedious. But the weird thing about a character like Winnie the Pooh is that he's very iconic, and we grew up with him, and a lot of people even older than us grew up with Winnie the Pooh.
Of course.
So what's different about this compared to, well, not even Wrinkle in Time 2 is the same way, and even Peter Rabbit. So I think why people are harder on these, because they do have a level of investment on it. Like, mm-hmm. people loved Wrinkle in Time because they were so in love with the book and they read that. Peter Rabbit, we don't need to know why, you know, like,
Peter
that's
Rabbit's
iconic,
another
right,
book, right?
Right. And so this one, the same thing, you know, you have all those classic Disney cartoons, the books and everything. So I feel like whenever you make an adaptation of something, it's automatically a little bit harder to appeal to everyone, because you can't use that.
I can accept
that. You can't just use the, like, the, oh, this was made for kids, because there are big kids, yes, like us.
Yes, I can use that. Well, because this is the thing. They make those types of movies banking on the fact that the parents will bring
the kids. Yeah.
So that's why I said it's made for kids. It's not made for us, because the parents are going to have to take the kids. But there has to be something that resonates with the parents first in order for them to even want to take
there
the
you
kids.
Go. Thank you. So much better
so
put.
So to your point,
yeah.
Pooh is iconic. Everybody yeah. knows Winnie the Pooh and Tigger and Piglet and Owl and all these characters. Everybody knows those, and everybody knows Christopher Robin too. So everybody knows those characters. So when you name a film Christopher Robin, it's like, oh wow, I wonder what, because you don't really know going into it what the trajectory of the journey is going to be for Christopher Robin. You don't know if they're going to backtrack and bring us up to speed. You don't know if they're just going to come in both barrels blazing where he is as an adult, like, you don't know until you go to see the film. But I think the highlights of the film are whenever Pooh and his friends are on the screen.
Absolutely.
And let me just give a huge, ginormous, big honey pot shout out to Jim Cummings, my friend and colleague, who's been voicing
yeah.
Pooh for over 30 years. He told the most wonderful story when I did a press conference with my mommy blogging crew.
Very nice.
He said that, he told me that originally Paul Winchell was the voice of Pooh, and that Paul Winchell had a stroke. And he told me something really interesting about Paul Winchell, that Paul Winchell was actually an inventor. Paul Winchell invented the artificial heart.
Oh.
Who knew that Paul
Winchell,
Winchell was a ventriloquist and an inventor, inventing an artificial heart? I'm like, what is happening right now? But as he got further on in life, he started doing more voiceovers and doing voiceover work. And Winnie the Pooh is one of the most iconic voices that he did. But he had a stroke at some point, because he got older. He was getting yeah. toward his 80s, and he had a stroke, and he asked Jim to come and visit him. Jim came and visited him, and he was sitting there, and Jim could tell that, you know, he was in a bad way. He said he had his hands open like this, with his hands apart, and Jim was looking at it going, well, what is going on? Why is he saying that? And he said that Jim looked at him, and he asked him, he said, what's going on? He says, can you take care of my little buddy for me? Baby, in the press conference, I boohoo. Like,
wow.
I was like, because I could visualize
that,
the
yeah.
whole thing. How special and heartwarming is that, to have the person who originated the voice of Pooh and Tigger pass it down to you? Like, that's a wonderful gift. And Jim can tell that to the person that he passes it down to when and if that time comes. But it was the best story ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Jim Cummings is a legend. I mean, and he's had such a long-standing relationship with animation. I mean, he was the voice of Tasmanian Devil, Darkwing Duck. I mean, he's been with the Disney Warner Brothers family for a very long time, and I'm so glad, you know, nowadays with animation and everyone kind of recast famous actors to voice animated characters.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
It's nice to actually see someone who's an original voice. Yeah.
Yeah, because someone in the junket asked him, they were like, so, you know, were you excited when you heard they were going to be doing Christopher Robin? Like, what was your response? And he said, my response was, I hope they cast me. Because, you know, it's like you said, they do have a tendency to recast things and you know, put a different spin on stuff. So I'm glad they kept it in the Jim Cummings family, because I'm just sorry. Nobody does Winnie the Pooh better than him. Yeah. Nobody.
I mean, I will say about this movie, too, is that compared to the last one that came out, which was not Disney related,
Goodbye Christopher Robin.
This is worlds better.
Because I was a little, because they kept saying Goodbye Christopher Robin in this film. Was this supposed to be Goodbye Christopher Robin?
And no, they renamed it's totally it? Different.
I started to
totally
get confused.
Totally different studio.
I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
I just want to give a big shout out while we're chatting to ZSB Lou. He is a die-hard Black Tomatoes fan, he or she, because I'm just assuming you a boy, but you know, let me know in the chat room which gender you are. But I want to give you a big shout out, because you always chat with us. You're always hanging in there with us. And to Michael B is another diehard Black Tomatoes fan. So hi guys,
thank
welcome
you so
and
much
thank
for
you for
watching.
Coming back.
Really appreciate
we
it.
We love you. We love you so much. So how many tomatoes would you give?
We're gonna be off on this one. I will. Spoiler alert. We're gonna be off.
I already know.
Three.
I give it 4.5.
There you go.
Yes. So the next film is Spike Lee's Black Klansman. And child, I know it's going to take us a good 20 minutes to talk about this one. That's why I was like, let me just keep it to two topics.
Yes.
Because we about to go in.
Yep.
First of all, it's been a minute since, first of all, let me backtrack. It's Spike Lee, I don't think, has been to the Cannes Film Festival since, I want to say She's Gotta Have It, but it's not that one.
It's been a long time.
It's okay. Let's just put it out there.
It's been a long time.
It's been a minute since his first film. I want to say it's She's Gotta Have It, though, but I know that that's not right. But somebody tell me what it is. I think it's She's Gotta Have It, but if someone's in the chat room, if you can just tell me what it is. Anywho, he hasn't been there for a minute, and he went back this past year with Black Klansman, and he won the big prize, the Grand Prix prize there. So congrats and shout out to Spike Lee for that. And I can understand why. Now, we've both seen the film, and it's crazy.
Yes.
So for those of you who are going to see it, it opens on August 10th nationwide. For those of you that are going to see it, it literally is a true story about this black cop. This black cop who was in Colorado Springs. He was the first black officer or detective in that precinct. He was, you know, floundering around doing his thing. And I don't know if it was so much that he wanted to make a name for himself or what, but he was trying to find a way to not be on desk duty or get some like mundane assignment at that precinct. So he saw an ad in the paper by the KKK saying that they were looking for, like, for real. Just,
for members.
For
yeah,
real.
I know.
They were
looking for
members. And he answered the call. And shenanigans ensued. Let's take a look and listen to the trailer.
Hello, this is Ron Stallworth calling.
Well, who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke.
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
God. Last time I checked. What can I do you for?
Well,
since you asked, I hate blacks. I hate Jews.
Mexicans and Irish, Italians and Chinese. But my mouth to God's ears, I really hate those black brats. And anyone else, really, that doesn't have pure white Aryan blood running through their veins.
I'm happy to be talking to a true white American.
God bless white America.
And that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
About Black Klansman. This is a true story,
oh
you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Ron Stallworth wrote his memoir. It's by the same name. It's called the same thing as the movie Black Klansman. And what happens is Ron literally answers the call. But since his precinct buddy to be him, to pretend to be him. So whenever they call, Ron Stallworth is actually the one they're talking to on the phone, but the person that they actually see is his detective buddy, Flip Zimmerman, who they assume is Jewish, and he's not, but that's a whole thing. Baby, let me just tell you something. When I saw this movie, my jaw dropped to my crack for the whole film. I was like, what is happening right now? Because first of all, I couldn't believe that there were people this stupid. And this is what it reminds me of. When I was a college student in Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah.
They told us, they meaning the administration there at the college, told us not to come out of our dorm this one weekend because the Klan was going to be marching past our dorm. They told us to stay inside. And this was, you know, in 1912. We're not going to say no years, but it was 1912. And I was like, is the Klan still a thing? Like, really? Yes, they went marching their little happy behinds, hoods and all, in all their glory, right down the street in Columbia, Missouri. And I was like, this is bananas. So if that was happening in Columbia, Missouri, I can only imagine the shenanigans that they had in Colorado Springs. Oh. Like, who puts an ad in the newspaper for a Klansman? Who does that? Crazy.
Those crazy guys.
Craziness. The journey that he goes on in this film is absolutely crazy. And you guys, spoiler alert, the guy that is playing Ron Stallworth is Denzel Washington's son.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he is. John David Washington is Denzel Washington's son. So there's that. And the apple surely did not fall too far from the tree because he is handling it on his own.
He was fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah, he was.
This was and an incredible surprise.
Look at you. Your eyes are lighting up. He's excited now, y'all. He's about to go in.
After the last couple Spike Lee movies, the last couple Spike Lee joints did not do anything for me. They were really disappointing. I mean, this one was just wonderful. I mean, it's lively. It's entertaining. It's on point. Like, it's so relevant to today. It's very scary how relevant this movie is to right now.
It is.
It's really, really scary.
You know what's really scary? Is that I think at one point, I'm not sure if they say, I can't remember if they say this in the film or if somebody said this at some point when number 45 was out there doing his thing, but somebody said, who would elect somebody?
Oh, yeah.
You, that quote about who would elect somebody from the KKK to run for president?
Yeah.
Well.
Well, I mean, that's, I mean, Spike Lee very much is a very political man. We know that for a fact. You know what?
And he was the perfect person to direct this film. Yeah. He was the perfect person. If anybody else had done this, I don't know. I might be looking at him with one eye open.
Yeah.
Because Spike Lee is just, you know, love him or hate him, he does his thing, and he knows how to make a socially impactful movie within an inch of his life. That's just his thing. Everybody has their lane that they thrive in. This is definitely his lane.
Yeah. I mean, I was just surprised by how funny the movie was, as well as how emotional it was. It's a very well-rounded film. Like, everything about it works. The cast is like spot on. I mean, John David Washington, fantastic. I mean, this is a name that I feel like we should already start throwing around for award season.
Yeah.
He's incredible.
He's totally going to be in there. You know he is, as well as Adam Driver, who plays Flip
Zimmerman.
Adam Driver can do no wrong. That's my boy.
I'm not a big fan of Adam Driver.
What?
I'm going to be honest. Yeah.
What?
Because of the Star Wars movies, I'm not really a big fan of him.
Stop it.
But when I see him in movies like this, I'm like, oh my God, this is the reason why people love you. This is the reason why.
The indie film king.
Yeah, he really does.
He does a lot of indie films, and Star Wars was kind of like a blip on the radar for him because he's like the indie film king. But baby, him in this movie, woo!
Did you like the nod? It's like, it's not really a nod to Sorry to Bother You, but I love the fact that you can actually compare the two movies with the white voice kind of thing.
But you have to understand that as a person of color, that's like a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, remember I was talking,
when I talked about
Sorry to Bother You, I was saying that, you know, as a person of color, sometimes, unfortunately, we find ourselves in a situation where we have to adjust our manner of speaking and how we speak around certain groups of people because we know that if we speak the way we're used to speaking amongst ourselves. It's not readily accepted or understood. So there's that. So I love the fact that he was like, hi, I'm Ron Stallworth. I'm like, okay, I cannot even. I cannot even with the sorry to bother you voice.
I know, but that was great. Funny. It was like, I watched that and I'm like, oh my God, there's two movies like this year.
So without completely spoiling the movie, there's a moment where he does that where you think he's going to be found out.
Yes.
I don't want to say what that moment is because it's like a pivotal moment yes. in the film toward the end, but it is literally the best moment in the film ever. You guys have got to go out and support Black Klansman and Spike Lee.
I completely agree. You have
got to go and do it because it is just, it is everything.
And I need to point this out. Topher Grace.
Oh, yes.
My God.
As David Duke, he's living.
It's like there is no way you can get any better casting.
He looks just like him.
The mannerism. They show the footage at the end. I'm like, wait a second. Is he related or something? I couldn't believe it.
That was the other thing. At the end when they showed who played who, it was amazing and mind-boggling how much everybody looked like the other. The only person that wasn't a real person was the young lady Patrice, because there's a whole segment in the film that's dealing with the whole civil rights movement
yes.
and Angela Davis and Stokely Carmichael, and shout out to Corey Hawkins for playing. He does this speech that Stokely Carmichael does at a rally for Angela Davis, and it is just, it's wonderful the way he embodies that speech and Stokely Carmichael's euphemisms, for lack of a better word. But he is getting down. I'm like, everybody, the thing is, everybody in that film, like from the top to the bottom, is just slaying. Like, there is not one weak link in that movie for me, not one. But the young lady that plays Patrice, that's not a real character. They just made that up for the purposes of telling the story.
Yeah.
But it was so good.
I think if I had to, there's the guy from The Blacklist. I forgot that guy's name, mm-hmm. but who plays the main KKK guy mm-hmm. who interacts with Ron.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was fantastic.
Everybody.
The one KKK guy who was like really over the top all the time.
The fat dude?
No. That's the guy from I, Tonya.
Right,
the guy from I, Tonya.
I'm like, why is he doing the same character?
I know,
in this
it's
movie?
The same exact character. I'm like, what is going on? He is.
Look,
he's really good.
He's good at playing that sloppy white dude. He is good. I give him
the
that.
Dumb sloppy white dude. Yeah.
He's good.
I'm actually talking about the guy who was like out to get Ron the entire movie.
The other dude. I just felt like he was too.
Like, here's the thing. I know that they were trying to do different variations of the Klansman. Like, the one guy was really scary because he believed so much in it, and he seemed like he was sane. That was what made him such an iconic, like, voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dumb guy, of course, is what you would portray.
Mm-hmm.
But then the guy in the middle was, like, always angry and mean, and
But there's always one like
that.
You're right.
There's
always that one like that. That just their answer to everything is let's just shoot them.
Yeah,
hang them.
You know what?
Let's
you're
just
right.
drag them.
I'm trying to make sense. I'm trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense. Like, seriously, like, does the KKK make sense? No. So I'm sure there are people who are there now and are exactly like that guy. You are 100% right. You are 100%
right. But my favorite thing in the world is when he got the membership card with his name on it.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
But this is the other thing I found out, too. So the character that Adam Driver plays, Flip Zimmerman, that's not really his name. They're not ever going to say what this dude's name is.
No, of course not.
Because if the white folks find him, it's going to be a wrap for him.
Yeah. No.
I mean, come on. No. You know he's in... What is it?
Witness protection.
You know he is in the witness protection program because they saw him. Like, that's who they interacted with.
For sure.
So, you know, he had to change his hair. He probably got a nose job.
He's living in Hawaii right now on the beach in a mansion. Not a bad life.
He's living a Goodfellas life
right about now.
Oh, my God. That was pure comedy to me.
What did you think about the... we can't spoil it.
No.
So there's... The movie does something very interesting that's not really giving anything away, but it incorporates some real-time footage, stuff that happened over the last couple of years, into the film at some point.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about that?
I think it was necessary.
You do?
I think it was necessary to give the audience the mood of the time that this was taking place. and where they were. They were in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So first there's that. There's not a whole bunch of black people
no.
there now. There sure as hell weren't a whole bunch of black people there then. So there's that. So, you know, I think that they were just trying to depict, and the music, I love that. Terrence Blanchard did the score for the film.
Yeah, it's great.
And I just think they did a really good job of infusing some of the really well-known 60s cuts with his music interfused to make the score. It was great. I mean, and usually Spike Lee used to use his dad to score all his films back in the day. So I'm just like, he's still keeping it in that jazz vein by using Terrence, which I thought was really cool, considering the type of story that he's telling. Because it could have been a score that was kind of just screaming at you the whole time, but I didn't think that it was.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I, you know, at first when I walked out of the movie and I thought back about the footage from the news that was used in this movie, I kind of said, was that really necessary? But in a lot of ways, it almost bookends the movie, right? Like, mm-hmm. you kind of feel like, oh my God, all this happened in the 70s, and yet we're here today. And
dealing
it's
with the
still
same mess.
Going on. It is so scary.
I'm so watching, tired of saying that on the
me
show.
Too.
I'm so scared
of
having to say that.
I don't know why this keeps happening over and over. It's like history. You know that the old saying, history repeats itself?
History repeats itself if you don't correct it in the first place.
I know.
So there's that. So if you don't find a way to counteract racism or racist behavior or the way people speak and deal with each other. Like, there's this one moment in the film where one of the Klansmen's wives is trying to get something done.
Oh, yeah.
And then when she is being, when her assignment is being aborted, so to speak, the first thing that comes out of her mouth is, oh, when a black man tried to stop her, the first thing
oh,
out of her
yeah.
mouth is,
oh, yeah.
he's trying to attack me. I'm like,
yeah.
Diva, please. Yeah. Like, really? Really? And that still happens. Like, I cannot tell you, this happened to me today. So I went to do an event. I went to do the red carpet for Dog Days premiere. And I went to get my card validated at the AMC, which is kind of where we were. And several white people walked past me, did the same thing. This woman said nothing. The minute I walked up, it was like, well, can you prove you were here? I'm like, I just said I was here for a premiere. You know, I just said what I was here for. Well, do you have proof? Do you have a badge? I'm like, no, I don't have a badge. I said I had something that said press, but it's crumbled up and on the ground somewhere. And I didn't have my phone. I'd left my phone in the car. So the young lady that did the carpet with me, I'm like, show her the pictures on your phone so that she can see that that's what we did. And she literally had to pull these pictures up on her phone before they would let me
that's
in
ridiculous.
To validate my parking.
That is ridiculous.
And she let two or three other people in before me that were white and said nothing to them.
Unacceptable.
So that's what I'm saying. It's an ongoing cycle. If you don't know any better, you don't do any better.
You know, and what makes this even scarier, the fact that you're bringing this up, is that we live in L.A., okay? So if
the most diverse
right,
state in the United States.
If this is happening in L.A., could you imagine what is going on in Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas, Kentucky?
No, I can. I'm from Missouri, and when I go back there, it's a hot mess.
Yeah,
so.
It's so... I think that's what makes a movie like this so incredibly special and so incredibly powerful, is that for a good portion of it, you could just have fun and be entertained. But by the time the movie comes to the end, you kind of get depressed a little bit.
Yeah,
because
you get
mad. Because you're like, why is this still going on? What do I have to do to make sure this does not go on?
You get mad. Yeah. As a person of color in this country, I get pissed off because I'm just like, you know, how many times does someone have to make this kind of movie? How many times does someone have to make this type of commentary? This is the third film that has come out this year.
Yes.
Sorry to Bother You, Black Klansman, and Blindspotting. This is the third film within, what, 3 months that's come out that has the same subject matter. How many times do we have to watch this on a big screen, on a small screen, on the news screen? How many times do we have to watch that for something to change? It's just annoying. And if I feel like people are marching and speaking up and being very vocal about it, but it just seems like there was a time in the 60s and 70s where if you did that, it automatically incited change immediately. And now when we march and we speak up, it just becomes more of, oh, they're marching again. Oh, they're speaking up again. Oh, they're on Twitter again. You know what I mean? Oh, Black Lives Matter. How about all lives matter?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, yes, all lives do matter, but black lives are the lives that are being pulled over for no reason. Black lives are the lives that are being shot and unarmed. Black lives are the lives that are being choked out with a chokehold when it's against the law to use that particular procedure to stop somebody. So it's just annoying. It's just annoying. Please don't get me on my soapbox.
It's okay.
I am like the.
I feel you. It's ridiculous. I think I told you a story. I never told the viewers this story, but I actually have four black brothers. I grew up in a household where we did adoption, and I have four black brothers. And there was times I grew up in New Jersey, and there were times where I would take them to restaurants or I would take them to movies, and people would not sell me tickets to a movie. They would say, they're not related to you. You cannot buy tickets to them. They would come up to us at restaurants and give us dirty looks or sit us in like corners and like criticize us like, oh, you made a mess on the floor. You know, we don't want you to come back here. Like, it, ridiculousness.
It's annoying. Yeah. I cannot do it. Cannot do it. So hopefully, which brings me to this point, actually. So, you know, as one of the very few female film critics of color, I'm so grateful and extremely honored that Black Hollywood Live, big ups to Dariel Kristen and Kevin Undergaro and Maria Menounos and everybody here in this building that has given us the opportunity to do this show, because it spotlights somebody like me.
Yes.
We did a, not we, but Travelle Anderson, who co-hosted with me a few weeks ago, he did a story on just 14 of us, but there's more than 14 of us. So I'm glad that I can be that female critic of color here at this channel, on this station, to represent and try to shed some light on how we feel. Because it's like you said, oftentimes we differ in opinions. Sometimes we differ in opinions because we're male and female. Sometimes we differ in opinions just because of our journey in life has been different. And sometimes, unfortunately, we differ in opinion because our journeys in life are different because you are a white man and I am a black woman. So there's that. And our experience is just different. Doesn't make it bad. Doesn't make it horrible. It just makes it different. And I'm so glad that we have the opportunity to sit here and discuss that without, you know, it getting ugly or uncomfortable.
Because we're mature adults. That's why.
Well, yeah, there's that. But I just want people that are listening to know that that's what this is.
Yeah.
And I am really grateful. And I'm grateful to everybody that tunes in, that listens to us on iTunes, that watches us on YouTube, that sits in the chat room and chats with us. I really appreciate you. Like, I cannot even begin to tell you.
No, and I love that article because I think it highlights voices, and I love your portion of it the most because
thank you
are saying in that, it's like, white guy, white, you know, don't be afraid. We're not here to replace you.
No.
We just want to be there as well so we can have a voice. There's room for everyone. And
yes.
I completely agree with you. There's been this like black and white kind of thing going on for the longest time, where we talked about this on the LA Online Film Critics show this week, where even in like pull quotes, there's a lack of representation. And you remember
you were quoted
Black Tomatoes representing in
Teen Titans Go movie.
Yes.
So I was very excited about that, but I was like, oh my God, yay, this was so exciting.
And it's funny because the same few names are always there, and I'm very grateful that my name has been coming up more and more now. And thank you so much, every studio who's been pulling me, and I really do appreciate it. But I would love to see someone like Carla, someone like Wendy, a lot of our members to be quoted as well, because I think there are movies that, you know, I won't like, and she loves, and even if we both love it, it's nice to mix it up. So give everyone an opportunity.
Absolutely.
That's what I want to say.
I just want to bring this up. I had a whole bunch of news, but I think out of everything that we discussed, this is the one thing I want, two things I
we
want
need
to bring
to,
up.
Real quick, we need to give our rating. Five for you.
Undeniable. So two things I want to tell real quick, that Kiersey Clemons is in talks to join Disney's live action Lady and the Tramp, so there's that. Malcolm D. Lee, who's from the Best Man franchise, big ups to him, he's in talks to direct Kevin Hart's remake of Sidney Poitier and Bill Cosby's comedy from the 70s, Uptown Saturday Night. And then this happened. So Netflix mistakenly finally announced the airing of a Louis Farrakhan documentary that actually is not going to air on Netflix. And Farrakhan, you know, has had a long history of what people consider to be hate speech. I met him and he's lovely. He's a big old geek that loves musicals, but there's that. And has been labeled an anti-Semite by the Southern Poverty Law Center for statements he's made going back decades. Twitter last month removed his verified status after he posted a video with the caption, "Thoroughly and completely unmasking the satanic Jew and the synagogue of Satan." So I'm pretty sure that has a lot to do with why they didn't air his documentary.
Yep.
So there's that. But I just wanted to, since we're on that subject, I thought I would shout that out. And oh, and our girl Jessica Chastain's production company, excuse me, Freckle Films, is teaming up with Voltage Pictures to produce Eve, in which she's also going to star.
Yeah, I love Jessica Chastain. Yay. I mean, she's just fantastic.
We love her here in Black Tomatoes.
She's so amazing.
So we're going to wrap it up. We had a very lively discussion.
I enjoyed this. I think we were both, you know, we were both very passionate about things today, yeah. And I think it really stood out. Like that's the great thing about film too, right? Like when you actually see something that you just want to talk about, like you can't wait. Yeah. You're like, I could talk about this forever, over and over and over again. Yeah. And that's how I felt about that movie.
It was exactly that. For us today. Yeah. So you guys, that is it for episode 24 of Black Tomatoes here at Black Hollywood Live. You guys, thank you so much for joining us. Go to iTunes, give us those 5 stars. Remember, I'm an underrepresented female film critic of color. Let a girl know. Follow us on YouTube, join and subscribe. And you can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. Next week, we will be talking about, well, actually, Die Hard is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. So my boo, Reginald Vell Johnson, is going to join us.
Oh.
He's going to come and talk to us. So there's that. And where can we find you, Scott?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Other Scott M, or go to weliveentertainment.com to read all my written reviews and interviews. Thanks.
All right. See y'all next week. Love, peace, and hair grease. Deuces.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.